You're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors.
This is Vermont Writers Week at the Vermont Studio Center, an international creative community for artists and writers in Johnson, Vermont. I spoke with the Studio Center's writing program director, Gary Clark, in 2008, and today on Write the Book, you'll hear a recording of that conversation. The mission of the Vermont Studio Center is to support artists and writers by providing studio residencies in a non-competitive international community, honoring creative work as the communication of spirit through form. My guest, Gary Clark, holds a BA degree in English and drama from Dartmouth and an MFA in poetry from the University of Oregon. He has been a staff member of the Vermont Studio Center since 1993 and lives in Johnson with his family. I interviewed Gary at the end of April 2008 during that year's Vermont Artists Week, which is a period the Studio Center devotes to hosting Vermont artists and writers. I began by asking Gary to talk a bit about the history of the Vermont Studio Center.
Vermont Studio Center, I should make clear, I was not here when it came into being. There's kind of a family history, you know, of this place. John Gregg and Louise Von Wisey, along with John's friend and fellow artist, Fred Osborne, decided in the early 80s, 1983, I think, to get this started. The motivation for it was a number of different things, creating a community for artists and at that time just artists when it was first
visual artists,
okay. That's right. But John and Louise, with a lot of help from their friend Fred, started this in 1984. They had, I think it was a $20,000 budget or something in four buildings. While it seemed like a very small program at the beginning and just something that took place in the summer, the aspirations for it were large. While it may have seemed like a small thing going on in northern Vermont, what was happening was really trying to find a way to create a truly international community of artists, initially visual artists and then writers over the last 15 years, to sort of live and work together in a place as beautiful and as quiet as our setting here in northern Vermont. The program expanded every year, and by 1988 or 89 there were people here year-round. And really, it's the mid-90s when we kind of hit our stride of our current symmetry and have this one unified program now for 50 artists and writers every month, all of whom get their own studio and work in an atmosphere of great creative freedom and community support, and also have the benefit of a roster of visiting artists and visiting writers who join the community every month.
I know this week's a little bit different, but when it's not Vermont Writers Week, what are the lengths of the residencies?
1 to 3 months. The majority of people come for a month, but a good number come for 2 months as well. And 3 months is more rare, but it still does happen every year.
Mm-hmm. This week is Vermont Writers Week.
Artists Week, so right.
Sorry,
it's for artists and writers.
Right? Yeah.
The existence of Vermont Artists Week sort of came out of, right at the beginning, our interest in wanting to make a connection with and have a sort of a reciprocal relationship with Vermont's own community of artists and writers, and also for us to somehow acknowledge our debt sort of to Vermont as the place, and as a place that symbolizes in many people's minds this quiet and fresh air and beauty and serenity.
Right.
It just seemed like a natural thing to do something to really welcome Vermont artists and writers every year in a formal way.
And is Vermont Artists Week always the last week in April?
Pretty much. It depends on when the year starts, but it seems to sort of straddle the end of April and early May.
Okay.
So it's a wonderful time here, too. It's sort of, we feel like spring has really arrived when the parking lots are full of Vermont license plates.
Right.
Yeah.
And you said how many residents tend to be here at any given time?
50, although we can accommodate sort of up to 56. It tends to be somewhere between 50 and 54 people, I'd say, every month. It just depends on scheduling, and sometimes there are last-minute cancellations or last-minute additions. But
right.
We kind of start expecting 50 and often can accommodate more.
Do you have any downtime where nobody's here?
Yeah, we do. There's a week next week. Okay. When Vermonters leave, that's sort of our spring cleaning week. We right. throw the sashes up and pull the rugs out into the streets and beat them with mops and that kind of stuff just to clean up after the long winter. And then also 2 weeks right around the end of the year holiday break between, I don't know, third week of December and the new year.
Now, as far as attendance and people taking full advantage, are you always full?
We are always full.
You're always full.
And in fact, for most of the months, we have a waiting list that our program director, Kathy Black, works with. There's great demand for the residencies. In fact, this past February marked the biggest fellowship deadline we've ever had, most applications we've ever received. We get about 2,500 applications every year for the 500 available spots. And we work with all the applicants that are accepted into the program to try to make it possible for them to come and work out the finances with them and find a balance between what we need to ask of people and what they can afford and just see if we can't find a middle ground. And,
right. How do you assess who gets to come?
It's rotating juries that make the evaluations. Everything's judged anonymously. There's new juries every fellowship deadline, both for visual artists and for writers. For my own part, and I know the rest of the senior staff here, we stay completely out of it. It's just a better situation. We're not really involved with any of the sort of final decisions. Yeah. So we have a number of the visiting artists that come through here are asked to serve on the juries when they're in residence. And I solicit the assistance of readers around the country to read initially all the writing that's submitted, and then I hire sort of a final judge who will take a final batch of manuscripts and make determinations based on what they think of the work.
Okay. From the writer's perspective,
yeah.
Do you hold workshops?
We don't hold workshops, no. When we began the program, there was a time where we did. I think it was sort of a model that allowed us, it was kind of a standard model that allowed us to kind of get on the map and start to attract some writers here initially. But we had our eye on a very different ball from the beginning, which was really very quickly to assimilate writers into the program format that we have here for all the visual artists, which is the primary aspect of that program is a residency in the traditional sense of that, which is your own studio and unlimited time to work and no restrictions put on when you can work or how you can work or what's expected of you or anything like that. That's the primary focus of our program. But as I mentioned earlier, we also have, as part of the program, the presence of distinguished visiting artists and visiting writers who, in our mind, kind of represent, in an ideal sense, people who have worked a lifetime at this challenge of being an artist and being a writer and designing your life around that, and somehow survived all the various opportunities there are to get off track and somehow stuck with it. For the visual artists, it takes the form of about a 20-minute to a half-hour studio visit. And for the writers, it's just a one-on-one manuscript conference.
Oh, okay.
For those writers who want it. Some people are here and they don't want that kind of thing. And that was one of the things about workshops that we felt was confining, was that it kind of demanded a certain, that everyone participate. In order for those to work well, you need everyone participating. And we didn't want to sort of ask that of people who are taking a lot of time out of their life. And we felt that we were going to be attractive to a much broader range of people with different experiences. Some people who wouldn't want a workshop at all. If we had them, they'd want to go somewhere else.
Is there a lot of interaction between the writers and the visual artists when they're
here? There is, yes. And between the visual artists and the writers and in all directions. And in fact, I make a point really of saying to the writers, when they get here, we have a bit of an orientation. We sort of break the community down into sculptors and writers and printmakers and painters just to answer some questions that are, you know, germane to those particular ways of working. But what I like to say right off the bat is to not mistake the different genres present at the Studio Center for any kind of partitioning between them. That really one of the great gifts of being at the Studio Center is the presence of people who are working very intensively with great focus, as you are, but in a very different way. Mm-hmm. And I think the conversations that can happen between people just sharing insights about how they work and listen to how other people work, and listen to a stone carver talk, listening to a sculptor from Japan or a painter from Mexico, and listen to them. I think it's just one of the real joys of being here as a writer, and seeing your work not only in the context of other writers and as a writer's group, but in the larger context of just makers. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a lot of, but it's not, you know, micromanage it. You know, we don't force people to, you know, we really try to leave people alone. It's right. As John Gregg often says, you know, in his opening remarks, it's, you know, our job is sort of, here's the food, there's the studios, goodbye. Once you're here, the experience is really yours to make for yourself and to be what you want it to be for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious if any of your visiting writers have been alums of the program. I keep saying writers, I'm sorry.
There are two or three, actually.
Generally.
Yes, there are a couple on the visual artist side and a couple on the visiting writer side. So that does, in fact, happen. As the place grows up, I mean, we're going to celebrate our 25th anniversary next year. And in growing up, inevitably that happens. People have different roles in the organization just as they sort of move through it. And it's always kind of fun to see that, you know. Mm. Someone who came as a, you know, as an aspiring 35-year-old sculptor, you know, 15 years ago, and is now doing very well in New York or something, and comes back as a visiting sculptor with a lot to offer in the way of insight and experience.
Now, the visiting writers, they'll give a talk, mm-hmm. and then do they have readings?
Reading, yeah. For the writers, the visiting writers, right, they give a talk to just the writers. We call it a craft talk. It's not really about craft necessarily, but I tell them that it really should just be something that comes naturally to them to talk about, something that's of interest to them, be it, you know, a certain writer or something that's affecting them in their own work or puzzling them. And then they give a reading of their own work, and then schedule conferences individually with the people who want them. Generally, it's, I'd say, of the, I don't know, 10 to 14 writers who are typically here every month, 6 to 8 generally are working, you know, have a conference with the visiting writer.
Okay. Oh, so you have far fewer writers than artists, visual artists.
We do, yeah. So. And that was sort of a, really just an issue of space, I think, initially. But I quite like it. I think it's a very rich experience for the writers that takes them very quickly out of the writing worlds that they've come from, out of the kind of confines of your own way of thinking and working. Because mm-hmm. typically, you're sitting at a table over there in the dining room, surrounded by people who don't work at computers all day. I was going to say, you know, typewriters or pens, but most people are working on laptops here.
Right.
And as I think most writers do these days. So I just think that's a particularly strong part of the writer's side of the Studio Center for mm-hmm. me. And I don't have any aspirations to really increase that number by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I just showed you the new studios over in the Maverick Studio Building along the river, and there are 16 studios there, so we can comfortably accommodate 16 writers in really good spaces. Mm-hmm. And just this winter we have, in fact, had two sessions where we have had 16. But beyond that, I certainly don't have any intention to grow it.
Now, you have an incredibly strong presence within Johnson. I'm impressed looking at all the buildings here.
Yeah.
You just mentioned the studios, the new studios for writers. What were these buildings originally? I mean,
generally speaking, the Old Town Gymnasium right across the street, the Old Town Garages, where the sand trucks in the winter used to be, the Old Town Clerk's Office. The lecture hall on Main Street was formerly an opera house. It was, I think it had some function in town. I think the town offices were there for a little while. I think Johnson State College may have owned it for a little while.
And the mill, what kind of mill was this?
The mill was a grist mill. This was grew out of the sheep farming history of this region. Before cows were what they were to Vermont, this was sheep country up here. And this was the grist mill, and it shared a waterfall for its power with, across the road here, the woolen mills. And so the grain for the sheep was all ground here on this side, and then the raw wool was delivered on the other side of the river, and it was made into cloth and yarn and other things.
You said you don't micromanage, but I'm curious, what is consistent about this structure of the day here?
probably the thing that's the most consistent about the structure of the day is the food. The meals are, you know, very regular. Breakfast is at 7:30 to 9, lunch is at noon, and dinner's at 6. And after a couple of weeks of that, you just know when dinner is, and you sort of just drop your brush or put down your pen or close your laptop, and you wander over to lunch or wander over to dinner. And but that's really the only thing that's regularly structured. We do have a series of readings and slide talks by the visiting sculptors and painters, which happen typically in the evening, but they're kind of on different evenings, and there's a schedule that everyone has, and they can attend those things or not, depending upon what they're doing that night or what they feel they need or want to do. And the only other thing that's very regular is just that the studios are open 24 hours a day, so you know that they're always there for you.
And if you get inspired at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure, or you work until 3 or whatever it is. The meals thing, I think it's important to mention, isn't just about, gee, it's at the same time every day because that's easy to remember. It's also because, you know, part of what we're trying to do is create a kind of cohesive community here too over the month. And rather than it just being some buffet that was open from 4 to 8 and people could wander in and out, it really creates a critical mass of community energy several times a day. And that's where a lot of the interaction and communication between people goes on. Because primarily, you know, this is a work center those other, you know, 21 hours of the day, so that people typically are in their studios on their own. And even though you're working in a studio building, we were just over in the writing studio, and, all those doors were closed and lights were on.
Yeah,
so people were just sort of working hard, and they'll come together at dinner time and talk about what they did this afternoon or what frustrated them or what's driving them crazy or what's giving them great joy and purpose in their studio. You know, we kind of just know these sine waves that people go through when they're here. You know, you get here and you're very excited, and you have 2 or 3 days of very intensive work, and it's all going great. And then around the first weekend or turning the corner to the second week, you sort of get this lull where some people are feeling like that initial burst of energy is, suddenly became a big block, and they couldn't get any work done in their studio. Their paintings were grinding to a halt, or their palms were suddenly petering out.
Right.
And then they kind of work through it, and then there's kind of a real newfound sense of purpose and energy that comes from having really had that studio available to you 24 hours a day. And then you find that you kind of, you know, you hit a rhythm, and you know, the work comes then really feverishly, and often by the time people are leaving, they feel like they're just getting started. Right.
The evening presentations, are those open to the public?
They are. Okay. They are open to the public. Yep, they're listed on the website, and I always love to see people from the community at the readings. Really enjoy to see their neighbors I know who come down, and we've been doing a little more to try to make it better known, really, in the county for people who. Stowe, Hyde Park, Jeffersonville, some of our neighboring towns, that this is a resource for them, and we'd love to see more people out. Even Burlington, I've got my friend Major Jackson or David Huddle come out every once in a while, and I'd encourage people to do that. And although you should, before you set out for the hour ride, call me first just to make sure that there hasn't been a change to the schedule.
No, right.
Yeah.
Do you ever invite editors or agents or host any sort of publication focused?
We don't. And that, again, is a very deliberate, what they say about sculpture, is sort of, you have to chop away, to find, I'm not trying to generalize about sculpture, but you've heard it said, the cliche is that, you're sort of carving away to find that shape or that form within the
right.
piece you're working with. And it's a very similar thing with the studio center. I think this program here, a lot of it is defined by what's been eliminated and what is not here. And we very intentionally do not have publishers and editors and people like that at the studio center. I think many people who write like to think of having their work published, or people already do have their work published. But this is just a place for that stuff to not be present.
Right. This is part of the creative
process.
To not
be posturing with an editor and trying to get your book sold while you're here. This is really about just being removed from that, because there really is plenty of that, as we all know, and in our lives as we're thinking about all the other things that come into this activity of writing and of making art. People said that you could have international consortiums or symposia here about international cultural exchange and that kind of stuff, and I don't know, maybe our maybe our posture will change a little bit as the world changes, and maybe we would have to. But basically, we're not that interested in that kind of stuff. We just want to bring international artists here and hopefully writers here in the future also, and give them a chance to work. That's going to be our contribution to that kind of dialogue.
Right, you know. Right. Do most of the residents choose to share their work in some, you know, way while they're here?
I would say most do, yeah. And there are a number of different opportunities to do that. We do host 2 open studio evenings every month for the visual artists, which is just a very simple format of after dinner you can leave your door open and people kind of wander through and they can take a look at your studio and see what you've done. Mm-hmm. Louise von Wisey also maintains the galleries in the Red Mill. And she loves to put up new work, and you can bring a piece over and have her hang it if you'd like. And for the writers, there are resident readings, so you can go. There'll be one tonight, in fact, and to which you've been invited. And and also resident slide nights. So if you bring slides or JPEGs here of your work that you've done, say, prior to your arrival at VSC, we rack them up or we download them, as the case may be, and you can share your work that way with people. So, okay. Yes, yep, there are ways to do that.
You have some really impressive names on the artists and writers communities that advise the VSC. What is their role? On the writer's side, I'll mention Hayden Carruth, mm-hmm. Maxine Kuman, Naomi Shihab Nye, and it looks like Grace Paley was also a member of that
group. She was,
group.
Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter, those really aren't active groups of people. Those were sort of marquee groups that kind of lent credibility to the various programs as we were getting started.
Okay.
But it's something that we would like to activate sort of both of those groups. And we're actually going through the process of trying to define what the roles could be. So we could really take advantage of the collective years and wisdom of those people in ways that could benefit us as we do our work and try to figure this whole thing out. You're sort of adapting to the changing realities of the world in terms of how you conduct business and how you establish an institution and provide for its future and all that stuff, while at the same time just never ever wanting to do anything to sully, I don't know, just the very special place that this place has become and is for people who, you know, who work here.
I noticed on the website that the staff are all writers or visual artists. Is that?
Yes, that's that continues to be true. That's right.
Is that by design or is that just sort of...
It is by design, yeah. And we have no bias against people who aren't artists or writers. I think people who are artists or writers and who have that need to be in their studio and they're kind of chafing at that and wanting to kind of get out of work to get to the studio. I think that helps people understand. There's like an institutional understanding of why people are coming to the Studio Center mm-hmm. and what they need while they're here and what's mm-hmm. motivating them to be here. And I think as a group, as staff, we understand that, I think just it helps us more naturally be of service to the people who are here. We don't have to sort of think about, well, why, you know, why do they want that? You know, you just understand because they're a painter,
right.
You know, because they're a writer, they're a poet, they're a sculptor. And we know that. We understand that.
Right.
And it just makes it easier to do our jobs, I think.
Yeah. My last question for you is for artists who are interested in coming here, writers or visual artists, do you have any, you know, even if they're not necessarily thinking of coming here, but do you have any advice for them as far as looking into residencies and conferences? And, you know, what should they keep their eyes open for that will help the experience be just right for them, you know?
You know, there are a lot of models out there. There are workshop models, there are MFA programs, there are places that are more sort of just for writers, conferences that are just for writing. You know, Breadloaf, for example, where a lot of my friends are, you know, have worked, and I know everybody down there, and they run an amazing program. Mm-hmm. It's a great, but it's very different from this. You know, it is just a writer's conference, and that can be something that can be very valuable for people. I think you just have to be deliberate about thinking about what you want and what you're after, and I think if you dig deep enough, you'll find that whether it's the Breadloaf Writers Conference or the Vermont Studio Center or... you know, gosh, the you know, the low residency MFA program at Vermont College, just to think of a couple examples here in Vermont. As a writer, you just have to look at what you need, talk to people who've been to those, had those different experiences, and ask them and see if what they're saying seems to resonate with you. The Studio Center is the largest of the artist communities in this country, with 50 people per month, and certainly the most international. So that is one of the distinguishing features of it, the sort of writing and visual art sort of combination, and then you layer into that just the number of people, and it just gives a great variety of potential interactions and contacts with people, and for those who want that kind of thing, this is a great place for it. I've often said to people, you know, if what you want to do for a month is go to a cabin totally by yourself, swat black flies, sip Chardonnay, and write poems, it's probably not the place to come, Studio Center. I don't mind saying that. It is a community experience, but our belief certainly is that can be a very rich one, and can inform and inspire and motivate and support and enrich your work, you know, as much as just about anything else.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with me.
Sure. No, you're welcome. It's been fun.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Gary Clark. Next week, tune in at the same time to hear an interview with author Matthew Aaron Goodman, whose novel Hold Love Strong was a USA Today New Voices pick. This week's Write the Book prompt is inspired by the Vermont Studio Center and writing retreats in general. Even if you can't get to a retreat at present, perhaps you can offer yourself a mini-retreat. Begin by looking at your writing space. Really study it. Is it a place you look forward to going to, sitting down, and working in? If not, what might you be able to do to create a more comfortable, enjoyable atmosphere? Maybe you need to put in a bookshelf full of the kinds of books that you might like to reach for when you need inspiration. Maybe you should consider new decor, a poster, a small, colorful rug, a comfortable chair where you can sit and read over a given day's work. Or maybe you need to do the opposite thing. Maybe you need to simplify. Is the space too full of knickknacks, books, papers, pens? Do you need to clean it out and reduce the clutter? Figure out what you need to make yourself look forward to being in your writing space. And then, on a certain day, plan ahead and make a little retreat for yourself. Make yourself coffee, make yourself lunch, put your lunch in a picnic basket and leave it outside your office door. Turn off your phones, ask your family to leave you in peace for one whole day, and create your own personal retreat. And then go to your space, sit down, and write. Good luck with the feng shui of this particular writing suggestion, and please listen next week for another exercise. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can keep up with coming shows by going to my blog, writethebook.wordpress.com. And a reminder, if you have comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. Please remember that this station is here thanks to community support and involvement. More information about The Radiator is available online at theradiator.org. The interview that I did with Gary Clark in 2008 was only a half hour long because that's how long the show used to be back then. So we're going to put a little bit of music on now, and Cheryl Willoughby will be back with you with her show, The World of Music, at 3 o'clock. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont.